健康、时尚、美食、出行，尽在衣食住行。
每周五晚9:30，请锁定 AM1150西雅图中文电台。
各位听众朋友们，大家好，这里是西雅图中文电台他说节目2021年的第八期，我是主持人静怡。关注美国华人女性自己的故事和精神世界，她们展现着当代华人女性的风采，激励着我们和时代的进步。她们跨越国家和地域的局限，彰显着中西方文化的交融，讲述他们的故事，传递他们的力量。今天和我们分享故事的是 Maria Yu， Salesforce VP of Engineering. Hello Maria, welcome to the show. This show aims to amplify Asian women's voice via sharing their unique story to inspire, motivate, and empower other Asian women.I'm incredibly grateful to hear Maria's talk at the Chinese Women in Computing Virtual Summit 2021. Maria demonstrated an Asian woman figure being a VP in United States and in IT industry. It brings tons of energy and inspiration to me. I could not wait to hear more and learn more. Let's start by Maria.What drew you to the United States, and what drew you in IT industry?
Thank you so much, Jingyi, for having me today. It's a privilege to be here, and I am excited to share my story with you and your audience. Let me start with a quick introduction of myself. My name is Maria Yuen. I'm currently a Vice President of Engineering at MuleSoft, which is a Salesforce company.MuleSoft is known for providing an application integration platform and help thousands of companies integrate, their IT systems. I manage, a team of 200 engineers distributed in San Francisco, Seattle, Chicago, and Argentina. Prior to my current position, I worked in various engineering leadership roles at Salesforce, Oracle, SAP, and BusinessObjects.I have been with Salesforce for about 7 years, and I love every minute of it. Salesforce is a very dynamic company that has a bold vision and a fabulous culture. I live in San Francisco Bay Area. I've lived here for over 20 years now. I met my husband in this area, and we have 2 teenage boys together. So one thing I want to share with you is, I grew up in Geelong, Taiwan.I lived there with my grandmother and my aunt and uncle for almost 12 years. I have a younger sister who also lived with me in Taiwan. So my father was working in the United States at the time. He was an entrepreneur and he had many businesses. So we lived apart for many years. But at around 12 years old, I finally joined him in the United States along with my sister and my grandmother. So, my sister and I, we arrived in Birmingham, Alabama. My father had a Chinese restaurant there at the time, so that's where we landed. Since arriving in the U.S., my family had moved around quite a bit. After a year in Alabama, we moved to the Washington, D.C. area, and that's the place where we settled down. I finished my middle school and my high school there in a Maryland suburb called Silver Spring.So my high school years were a period of discovery and growth for me. First of all, my father was very busy running his business. He has started a commercial air conditioning and heating repair business. And my grandmother didn't speak a word of English. So I was really on my own in terms of navigating high school. I didn't know what I was supposed to do, which classes to take,and I don't quite remember exactly how I navigated high school, but I think I just figured it out on my own, with friends, teachers, and guidance counselors. So it was a really wonderful 4 years. I joined, clubs, I made friends, I joined this speech and debate club for a couple of years, and it turned out to be extremely helpful for me in my professional life later on, as you could imagine. In terms of music, that is one area that I got really into, in my high school years. It became a really important part of my identity. So by chance, my band director introduced me to an instrument called bassoon. It's an instrument that's hard to play and very few people play it. And somehow in my teenage mind, I was really attracted to this strange looking instrument, and I decided that I would learn it. So from there, I joined lots of groups, school bands, orchestras, musical theater. I also started to compete at the county level and then later at the state level. I really got into the music scene, but I decided that's what I wanted to do with my life. I'm going to play bassoon professionally. So when it was time to apply for college, I applied to just one school, which was University of Maryland. It was 15 minutes away from where I was living, and I was accepted as a music major. So going into the tech industry was not on my radar at all at first. At the time, my high school offered a couple of introductory classes in programming. I took the class, and the teacher taught us programming language, one programming language called Pascal. It was a really fun class. The class had assignments where we get to make a game like Connect Four. That's a board game, and some, you know, really fun exercises. I had a really fun time during that class. So coming back to my decision to be a major in college, when I told my dad, he was not happy. Like many parents, he was very concerned about the job prospects of being a musician. And he told me that he has heard about computers and that it's a good career. And since I really like my computer programming class, I decided that I would add that to my major, and I became a double major. So fast forward a few years after I got my degrees, I came to my senses. I came to a realization that I'm not going to make it as a professional musician. So I started to become more serious about computer science as a career. I proceeded to get a master's degree in computer science from the University of Wisconsin in Madison. When I graduated, it was 1998 from Wisconsin. It was the height of the dot-com boom at the time. Everyone in my class had multiple job offers when they graduated, including me. And that was the start of my career in technology.
Such a wonderful story. I love your story about self-discovery path in high school, as well as your independence. I think you started to develop that sense in high school. So we're talking about two majors. Typically, we go one major like computer science, and I see you have a very good combination with arts and science, probably left brain and right brain, so with CS and music performance. Since you started actually with music, I would ask the question the way asked, how did computer science help your music performance later on? Did anything help you? From like your left brain to right brain, or right brain to left brain, how they connected?
I am not sure about computer science helping in music. I know that there are studies that says that they are related, but concretely, that's not something I've thought too much about. But certainly, when I look at the other way around, right, being a performing arts major, how has that helped me in my career as a technology person? I certainly feel the effects of the performing arts aspect of it long after I graduated. So it's really about approaching problems or talking to people or presenting ideas in a different way. I found myself always, engaged with my audience in a different way than some of my colleagues who perhaps didn't have a performance art background. Because in performing, you are engaged with the audience. You have to gauge the response. So that's a really important feedback loop that comes naturally for me. And I didn't realize that it would help me in my career until later on. I realized that was, you know, many times a link that's perhaps missing for people engaging and then also getting that feedback loop from the audience. So I definitely see it helping the other way around, the performing arts aspect helping them in a career.
Yeah, I do see the early training or the development for you made it everything very, very naturally to you. But for us, just a pure computer science major, it might not be natural. We have to make extra efforts, probably reaching or even realize we need to engage with the customers when we do presentation.
Yeah, absolutely. I see that as well. Yeah.
Okay, let's get to the main part, the career trajectory. I do see your huge accomplishment in the LinkedIn profile. Maria, I want to know, through your entire career trajectory, do you have any aha moments, especially during your transitions? I do see your transition multiple times, from your IC to a management role, from a manager to a director, and to a director right now to a VP.
Yeah, from a career perspective, my progression is probably typical in many of the tech industry. Typical in the sense that I didn't deviate from the technology path. So after graduating school from Wisconsin, I came to Silicon Valley during a pretty exciting time, the dot-com boom. I started out as an engineer. I rose the ranks. And then I decided that management is what my interest like, where I can best leverage my skills. As I said, I do have friends that later on went into program management, product management, marketing, different aspects in the tech industry, but still related to technology. I pretty much stayed in the technology track. And I have to say, one of the earliest aha moment for me is that the right opportunity rarely comes at the right time. Well, that's one of the biggest aha moments for me. So when I made the decision to move into management in my career, leading up to it, I have been working on it. I've been talking to many people about it. My manager, I've been working on it for a long time, but nothing really came of it. Opportunity didn't come up or the timing wasn't right. So in early 2006, I had my first baby. And becoming a mom was a very overwhelming experience for me, as with many new moms. So during my maternity leave, I was really busy and struggling with my new life as a mom. And at that time, one of the managers for my work reached out. Her name was Su Long. She had a management position open and she was offering it to me. So when Su Long and I met to talk about it, I was so scared because I didn't know how I would juggle being a working mom and a brand new job, and everything was just extremely overwhelming. And I just remember Su Long telling me that if you want the right opportunity happening at the right time, it never happens. Things don't align that way. And sometimes you just need to take that leap of faith and figure out the rest as you go. So that's what I did. Unfortunately for me, I wasn't, on this new journey alone. My husband was, and he still is, extremely supportive of my career. And Su Long, my manager, she was a wonderful mentor who spent so much time guiding me in those early years. So, and this aha moment, came later on, actually recently, I want to say early this year, when I was offered the VP position. And I also had thinking the same thing that it's not the right time. There's a pandemic and the world seems to be blowing up with a lot of, events happening. It just, I was not in the right frame of mind to take the job. But then I thought to myself, this is what I wanted. And if I'm waiting for the right time, it'll never happen. So I can't, try to align the two. I just need to take that leap of faith. And I'm really glad that I did. So After that, I want to say that there's another moment, aha moment, is when I realized that I have to hire people who are better than me in order to scale. So this is probably one that some of the audience members may have heard in their careers as well. You know, hire people who are better than you. But it's really taken me a while to really understand the impact of that statement. And this really wasn't in a hot moment, but more of a aha progression. Throughout my career, I've encountered several just really exceptionally talented people. And when they're on my team, they really elevate everyone on the team, including me, so that I'm able to focus more on strategic initiatives. And in turn, I can elevate the rest of the team. So that's another big learning that I want to share with you.
That's really good for good stories, like the leap of faith. I think I share the same, waiting for the good moment, waiting for all the good signals coming, but sometimes it's just really coming or the moment is not right. So yeah, that's a really good learning for me. Thank you for sharing. Take a leap of faith. You want it, then just take it. And everything else probably just gonna work out on its own.
Yeah, I agree.
On the other side, during the career trajectory, what is the biggest challenges you've had and how did you overcome it?
I would have to say the biggest challenge has always been the constantly changing landscape of the world of the technology world that we live in. So there's always technology changes and the way that people work constantly changes. So in my 20-year profession, I started with on-prem. And on-prem software, right? And then the movement of SaaS, came to hold. And it's a different way of working. And, earlier on, you have, when it comes to different types of engineers, you have multiple different types of engineers, each one of them focused on development and then quality, and then there's operations. And that migrated to now you have one engineer that can do it all. I think the biggest challenge for all of us is keeping up with the constant rate of change, not just technology, but also methodology and the mindset change. So, I find the best way to stay with it is I have to find ways to constantly change myself. So some people translate that to, changing companies often. Actually, you change your job. You go to a different position, a different job, different way of working to make yourself, to stay on the leading edge. So I've done that in my career as well. I know other people probably look at my career and think that you haven't really changed all that much, but I do try to find something different to work on and stay ahead. Currently, I would say the biggest challenge in the recent couple of years. As a leader, my biggest challenge is how to engage people in a meaningful way in this new remote-first environment. So at Salesforce, we've always defaulted to a in-person work environment. Now, Salesforce has beautiful offices around the world, and even though we have distributed teams, the majority still operate around physical offices. So, and when I look at my team in particular at MuleSoft has grown so much in the last 2 years. We're now in a situation where majority of the company was hired since the pandemic started. So like many other companies, we tried a variety of ways to drive that engagement, new way to engage by trying different communication strategies, meeting strategies, and we've tried things like a 4-day week. So working in this remote first mode is a new muscle that we're still developing. We're constantly trying new things and see what works. I can't say that we've accomplished or solved that challenge yet. It's still a challenge that's ongoing.
Yeah, I hear a theme on both of them. Actually, it's change. But before, we all just at work, and it's very easy to communicate. You can just knock the door and have a, even just water cooler, you can have a conversation. Right now, everything become like virtual. You have to have a different way to communicate, even from on-prem to online. It's also become virtual. Before we have the server, we can see it, and everything moved to online, we cannot see it. How should we build the trust with the company? So it's I see the same theme is just change. So it's a constant right now, probably. The constant of the world right now has become change itself.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the tech industry, I think especially the world moves super fast, right? Faster than many others. So, it's important to keep up.
声声有情
1150 AM 西雅图中文电台，
这里是您的信息中心，
这里是您的心灵港湾，
这里是您的精神家园，
西雅图华人自己的中文电台。
朋友们也可以在网上收听我们的节目，收听网址是 ChineseRadioSeattle.com，
也可以通过智能手机下载 Chinese Radio Seattle 或者西雅图中文电台 APP 来收听我们的节目。
我们的高清调频频道是 FM 98.9 Channel 3。
我们的微信平台、新浪微博和 Facebook 账号都是 Chinese Radio Seattle。
WEEE 北美最大华人网上身心超市中秋节回馈新老客户，来就送20元大红包，邀请好友双方再得20元。全场优惠半价起，新鲜蔬果、米面肉蛋海鲜、零食饮料、面食点心、美妆保健全都有。We 方便省钱新鲜，网上轻松下单，次日送到家，最佳售后，网上无理由退款。拿起手机，立刻下载 App We WEEE 注册领取20元红包。
Puget Sound Energy 普杰湾能源公司计划在2045年实现拥有100%公平和持久的清洁能源的目标。您的支持和参与即是我们能达成此目标的关键因素。请于11月14日前访问 pse.com/plan CHI 来发表您对我们计划草案的意见，并获取赢得$100礼品卡的机会。浏览 pse.com/plan CHI 了解更多详情。
华盛顿州法律保护工人的权利。如果您的雇主否认您的工作权利，比如不能保障最低时薪、午餐时间和休息时间，以及安全健康的工作环境，那么州劳工和工业部可以为您提供帮助。如果您对自己的权利有疑问，请致电就近的 LNI 办公室，或者致电免费电话1-866-219-7321。
This is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle. The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guest, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Chinese Radio Seattle.
现在是美国西部时间晚上10点整，这里是西雅图中文电台。
I hear one of the strategies you're using is you initiate the change, right? You start changing your career every once in a while, and you're trying to go to different companies, trying to learn. I have a follow-up question to you, Maria. How do you continue to learn to stay like on the top of things as a VP?
I learn by reading. I read a lot.I read the common publications on the tech news, tech industry. I also stay close to what's happening in the market. I think all of us know that on LinkedIn in tech, you at a time like this, you get pinged a lot from different companies wanting to,startups, right? Trying new ideas. They want to talk to you about job opportunities. So sometimes I take those calls, not because I'm looking for a change, in terms of, changing job, but understand what is happening on the market. What are the new industries that are popping up? What are, the new ways of doing things?That's coming up. So that's another way, practical way that I stay, close to the ground to see what's happening in the market.
It's really awesome, very inspiring. Like, give me a different view about when we learn things. It's not necessarily you, it's different ways of learning. Just take a call from a recruiter, you can just learn a job. Not necessarily you're going to take the job, but you can get a sense about what is happening right now. So make sure you stay in the current. That's a really good tip. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, for sure. It takes a lot of time, though, talking to recruiters and, you know, doing those things. You know, it's a time sink. But I think it's an investment that you have to be strategic about. You don't want to talk to everybody that comes your way. But yeah, be strategic about who you talk to, and I think you'll learn a lot in the process.
Maria, as a very strong Asian women leaders, you demonstrate a lot of your leaderships. And how do you even see your Asian identity, especially in IT industry? We're surrounded by a lot of like males. Do you have any new realization in recent years?
Absolutely. For me, my Asian identity was, I don't find that to be as influential in my career as being a woman in the male-dominated industry. And it's amazing to me to see the progression or the experience for a woman in tech industry from 20 years ago versus now. So throughout my career, I've experienced plenty of scenarios that you probably read about in HR, you know, training videos and things like that, right? So I have been excluded from opportunities because I'm not part of, you know, certain boys clubs, right? Or where the decisions are made, or I don't attend certain functions where people drink after work because they don't have to go home and take and pick up the kids, and, you know, decisions are made in those environments. Or, you know, I've heard that I'm not taken seriously because I'm a mom, or I'm perceived as not technical enough for whatever job, right? Some of those slights were obvious to me. I can see it, I can feel it. And sometimes they're not. Sometimes it happens behind the scenes where others have to tell me, right? And just imagine the, you know, what others don't tell me. So, you know, those were experiences where, you know, I think were, you know, painful. They were painful to me, and I usually feel pretty helpless and alone. However, I have to say that in the last, I would say 10 years or so, right, there's been an extreme, the awareness of diversity, awareness of inclusion has just, you know, grown tremendously in the tech industry. I think a lot of it is driven by necessity. Women, you know, accounts for like 50% of the workforce. So if you need more people in the workforce, you know, it's a big pocket that you're overlooking. But I think another big part of it is just really a change in attitude, right? A positive change in attitude to be more inclusive. So it's a trend that I'm really, really happy to see. Lots of tech giants have since created, you know, initiatives or raised awareness to elevate not just women, but in general, underrepresented groups to leadership position, and just to increase representation in the tech industry. So, you know, Salesforce has been one of those leaders in developing programs to support equality and increase the diversity in leadership. It's one of the reasons why I stayed with the company for 7 years. I'm very proud to be part of that movement.
Yeah, I also saw I think it's Twitter or somewhere in your introduction, you're saying you're right now working your dream job. I can feel like your love of Salesforce like is spreading everywhere. Even on your title, you're saying I'm right now working in my dream job.
Yeah, no, I think, well, you know, it's an important topic to me, being, supporting women, being one of those underrepresented groups, right? And to be in an environment where you are supported makes a huge difference to me.
Yeah, that's really true. One of the topics I remember you mentioned during the conference, which I would like to expand today, is you mentioned about one of the tips you learned and you want to share is about executive presence. So, first of all, what is that? That's actually what my first time heard in the summer. Now, I just wondering, I would like to ask you, could you please give us a definition and your understanding of input of this topic?
Yeah, so executive presence, I think in professional careers, you've probably heard a lot about this word being thrown around. So when I first heard it, I remember when I first heard this, there was a sense of some kind of a magical powers around it. It's like showmanship. Maybe it's, you know, executive presence is where you put on a show, right? In a professional way, which is something that's reserved for people who are very good at performing, like, you know, their talents, people who are talented at performing. So I often hear about this term associated with presentation skills. You know, how do you dress for the event? How do you move your hands? How do you make eye contact? You know, the logistics of delivering a speech or a presentation. And there are lots of classes, you know, built around this, right? Presentation skills and, you know, how you structure your presentation. So I heard of this word used recently as in the last couple of years. It was used to describe one of the members of my team when he was taken to with our CPO to present something to the CEO of Salesforce. And he was described as lacking in executive presence. So since then, I've tried to break this down to understand what this means, right? In order to figure out how to help my team members and myself to better understand. So when it comes to executive presence, certainly there's the presentation aspect that I think, you know, people hopefully have a good idea or more concrete ideas about how to achieve. But there are a couple of important aspects that I think contributes to executive presence. The first one is you need to know your audience so you can cater your information to the appropriate level. So when you're talking to an executive or a group of executives, what is their understanding of your product or your problem or your market that you're trying to address, right? So they may not have the context, the whole context of what you're trying to do. So it is absolutely crucial to do in your preparation to understand what your executives are looking for in your presentation. What is their understanding of the situation so that you can determine the right level of details that you want to present. So understanding your audience, I would say, is one of the most important things that you can do when you prepare to talk to a group of people. So, and always double checking on the terminology you use to avoid, you know, terms that are very specific that may not be obvious to an outsider.
老公，上次水管漏水，保险给邻居赔了好几万。
那咱家咋赔这么少？
他们找理赔专家，同保险公司据理力争，才得到更多赔偿。
我是理赔专家 Tina。如果您的住宅或商业房屋受到水灾、火灾，保险理赔太少，让我们为你讨回公道。我们有执照，为房主讨回了数百万赔款。
水灾、火灾不要怕，理赔专家找 Tina。425-988-0388 425-988-0388。
肌肉骨骼伤痛、车祸、工伤，请找康健脊椎治疗中心肖明医师。康健康健，祝您健康。电话206-621-7501206-621-7501。
Crossings TV、Comcast 有线电视、Xfinity 152台，为西雅图华人观众送上豪华中文电视节目大餐。东方新闻、凤凰卫视新闻、非诚勿扰、一站到底、芝麻开门，每天还有精彩电视剧和更多资讯和娱乐节目，请记得收看 Crossings TV、 Comcast 有线电视、 Xfinity 152台。查询详细节目信息请访问 www.crossingstv.com。
Another thing is, you know, you have to be very quick on your feet. So what kind of questions can you expect from your audience? And you should practice that, right? What are the controversial topics that may come up? What are some of the hard questions that you're going to get? And then be ready to answer those. And also have a strategy. What do you do when you don't know the answers? So, and most importantly, I think executive presence is, there is another, you know, maybe more of a softer skill that comes with executive presence, right? People are looking to you to instill confidence. So, you know, they want to look at you and hear you talk, and then they want to have that sense of confidence that, yeah, you know what you're talking about, you can take charge and you can lead, right? And I believe in you as a leader. So as a leader, you have to be able to articulate the value of your product, your vision for the future, in a very confident way, in a succinct way. You have to be able to talk about them, you know, at a drop of a hat. So I think that's a critical skill is that, you know, how do you instill confidence from others to your ability as a leader? That's a question you need to ask yourself. Okay. So I believe that some of these things that I talked about can be learned, right? These are, it's all about being aware that how are you being perceived? And you can probably find articles, of course, that can help you with the various aspects. But one thing I've found to be very effective is to observe executives that you respect and learn by watching them.
Yeah, I also really like that tip. It's just learn by seeing someone you admire. And I think it's very, you can turn a lot of very, like become a very concrete. You can see it. Yeah. Then it's not like very abstract, like communication, quick on your feet. And then what does that really mean? You can really see a person to do so. I think I had a misunderstanding in the very beginning about executive presence. I read that as you have to be an executive to have that presence. Actually, it's not true after I heard your presentation. I think that's not true. It's like you probably should start building that. Then good opportunity comes, then you can grab the opportunity.
Absolutely. And another ally that you should always reach out to is, you know, your manager and your peers, mm-hmm. how you come across, right? So, you know, one habit that I've also built throughout my years is I often reach out to my manager and my peers and then ask them about, you know, a presentation that I did, you know, how did it go, right? What do you think of the response from let's say, you know, the person that I'm presenting to? You know, how do you think the audience received the message? How do I come across? Do I come across as somebody that understands the vision and can drive this forward? So yeah, I think you can get a lot of signals also from people around you.
Yeah, that's a really good feedback too, Maria. It's like you ask for feedback, then immediately you get the feedback back, then you can close the loop. They can like definitely, I think you can add back to your existing skill set, then you can improve or adjust like your strategies as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I have one quick question for you, Maria. So typically when I heard people saying about a key factors of success, you mentioned skill set, connections with people, and opportunities. What's your input of those three? If I have to ask you to rank it, do you see which one is higher than the other one, or the three are equal? Skill sets, connection, opportunities.
I would have to say, I forgot the terms that you're using for the connections with other people, relationships with other people.
Yeah, connection, relationship with peoples, and opportunity is the second one. The third one is your own skill sets.
Yeah, well, I have to say, you know, the connections with other people is by far the most important. You know, you probably heard about this in other forum as well, but after living in it for so long, you know, it's I have to say all the recent opportunities that I've gotten or I've come across are because of the connections that I've made in the past and maintained in the past. So that is absolutely the number one the number one thing that I would suggest people to focus on. So building those connections and then maintaining those connections are absolutely crucial. And I think with that, you know, some opportunities will come, right? A lot of the times, the opportunities that are the most interesting or the most rewarding are the ones that are not posted on LinkedIn, or, you know, the ones that are that you relied on your connections to get and to find. So definitely the connections with people, keep them alive, work at them. It takes a lot of work to keep connections, but it's absolutely a great investment.
Awesome. Yeah, I take it with heart. Yeah, I should try to more even aware of like the importance of connections, and that connections potentially can bring your more opportunity. Because skill set in one way or another, you can build it on your own. But connection and opportunity, I see that with multiple ways. It's not something you can just solely rely on yourself to achieve it.
Yeah.
Since we're in 2021 November, I want to ask you, Maria, what's your current focus? And do you have any plans, visions in the rest of the year and 2022?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I can't believe 2021 is, you know, we're in October, right? So the year is ending. Before you know it, all the Christmas decorations are coming out in the stores. Hard to believe. Well, it is, we're actually kicking off planning season for next year. So for the next few months, I'll be bringing my team together and review our goals and roadmap for the next year. But, you know, in addition to just, you know, product roadmap and goals, there's going to be a lot of discussion and emphasis on raising awareness on a variety of equality issues, right? That is part of our planning. Building culture, right? Building an inclusive workspace, it is part of our planning for the organizations. Not only are we planning for product, we're also planning for culture, planning for people development. I have to say, you know, planning time is always really fun for me, because it's a time that you are reminded to look back look back at the last year, right? All that you've accomplished. And whenever I'm looking back, I'm just always astonished at how much the organization has grown and how all those incremental changes that you're making in, you know, individual projects here, individual project there, how collectively they amount to significant forward progress. So it's always really fun. It's always very energizing to look at that, right? Look back and what you've accomplished, and you're feeling this, you know, refreshed energies that you're looking forward to the next year.
Awesome. So any other personal plans and visions for 2021, the rest, or 2022?
Oh my gosh. Personal plan wise, I have two teenage boys. So, what can I say? Teenage boys are, trying to keep them focused. I guess that will be my personal challenge, keeping them focused. Making sure that they are thriving in their high school environment. The pandemic has been so hard for, I think, kids, especially teenagers.
Yeah.
My teenager has certainly felt the stress of the pandemic, so they're right now recovering from that. The school year so far has been going great, so I'm just really grateful for them to be able to go back to school, and I'm going to focus on keeping them in school for as long as possible.
Yeah, also holiday season is coming, and definitely will give us more joy and peace into our life and personal life too.
Absolutely.
So which woman or women inspire you?
So people that inspire me the most, you know, most of the time they're not celebrities. They're celebrities that I admire absolutely, but the people that I look up to and that made a material impact to my life are people that I meet in my daily life. They're not celebrities, right? So, you know, one family member came to mind is my aunt that I grew up with in Taiwan, and she later on moved here to the U.S. as well. She is somebody who is extremely hardworking, can overcome language barriers and lots of barriers, and then she worked multiple jobs to provide for her family to the best life possible, right? So that kind of, tenacity, it doesn't matter what kind of obstacles life threw her way, she can overcome it. So I just admire her so much for that. And I see that in many other women too. The last nanny that I had for my kids from a couple of years ago, she has three kids of her own and she works two jobs to ensure that her kids have all the opportunities that she didn't have. So I have to say the women from my daily life are the women that I drew the most inspiration from. And then looking at them, that gives me the fuel to always want to support each other, to support women professionally or in any context. Because we are a community and we need to be there for each other.
Yeah. Alone we can do so little, but together we can do so much.
Absolutely.
I think it's
well said.
Yeah, it's by Helen Keller. So
well, before
we close it, I want to have several very fun burning questions with you, which we never share with Maria. I'm going to just ask it out.
Go for it.
Okay, so the first one is, if you are not a VP of engineering right now, what would you be now?
Wow. I would play music in a community orchestra. I would probably teach as well, have a studio of my own and teach kids how to play the bassoon. I don't know how many students I'll have as a bassoon teacher, but that would make me very happy. Mm-hmm. In fact, I talk with my husband all the time that, one day I'm going to say, hey, I can't keep up with all the technology changes anymore. I'm going to retire at age 50 or 55, and then maybe I'll go back to playing my instrument.
That's really cool. Yeah. I wanna even see you play that.
Hopefully, maybe in a few years.
The next question is, what is the greatest thing happening to you this week?
Oh, this week. Outside of work, I also like to do things in my garden, take care of plants and, watching stuff grow is very satisfying for me. I have a fig tree in my backyard that I have not had any luck with it for several years. Either they don't bear enough fruit or the squirrels get to them before I can get to the fruit. But this year has been a phenomenal year. And this week is the harvest week. A lot of my figs are ripe and I'm beating the squirrels and getting to my fruit. So it's been really fun picking figs off of my tree and sharing them with my friends.
Awesome. That is really, I think it's really good feelings about fall as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
The next question is, how do you start a day?
With a cup of coffee. Start
Same
my
with.
Day. Yeah. And you know what? I'm not a picky coffee drinker. I'm not, instant coffee is perfectly fine with me. In fact, my coffee connoisseur friends, think I am, they always make fun of me because I think all the fancy coffees are too bitter. I like the 3-in-1 white coffees from Singapore and Malaysia, but I get them from Ranch 99, those packets. They come with sugar and cream. It's not fancy coffee at all, but I love it. It's sweet, it's tasty, it's warm. It's a wonderful way to start a day.
I'm going to try that one next time when I go 99 Ranch, because I know the package. I remember the package.
They're yummy.
I also noticed you write yourself as a cooking enthusiast. So I'm going to ask you, what is your favorite Asian food?
My favorite Asian food is stuff that I can't make, actually. I don't know how to make those. I love breakfast foods. So in general, I like Taiwanese food. But specifically, I like, doujiang, fan tuan, right? What else? Danbing. Breakfast foods. It's so comforting to me. It brings me back to my childhood. You know, wake up in the morning, there's street vendors. I can get my doujiang. I can get my fan tuan. That makes me so happy.
Awesome. Thank you very, very much, Maria, for such an empowering conversation. I remember Michelle Obama mentioned there is no limit to what we as women can accomplish. Maria Yu shares an inspirational journey as an Asian woman chasing her dream in tech industry with grit and perseverance. In the meantime, I have absolutely heard and learned your inner power and the determination. As I'm working in IT industry, I would like to thank you, Maria, as a strong female role model for me and for us fellow Asian women. This is particularly important for us to see people who looked and sounded like us in senior high leadership positions with great accomplishment and start believing that we could make it that far. Thank you, Maria, again. And see you all in next episode of She Said.